All right, good morning again for the recording people. It is July 11th, 2023. Puts us smack in the middle of summer. I hope everyone is well. I hope nobody here. Oh, well, I don't know. Vicky, did you get hit by the rain? I saw like, what, 9 inches of rain, something fell in the Hudson Valley or... You're a little further west than that. All right, good. Yikes. Okay, folks, we're going to start with 20 minutes of meditation. I'll give some guided instruction to get us started and then just let people sit quietly. So just beginning just by settling into your sitting or lying posture. You could also be standing or walking. If you are driving, please do not close your eyes. Otherwise, you can close your eyes if you like. And just starting by connecting with the feelings in the body, with the breath. Well, there's a tendency to close off or kind of try to block out uncomfortable feelings. This just tends to create more stress and tension. So I find it helpful at the beginning of a sit to actually do the opposite, to open. Just sort of asking, what's here right now? What feelings are here? Is there anything lurking that I'm sort of trying to ignore? And welcoming that. So in a sense, it's like you open the body and let all the feelings release through the body. And so this specifically relates to softening the belly, letting the breath go into the belly, so that when you breathe, the chest and the belly are open and receptive. And then whatever feelings are there tend to be released by that. And that can be a little intimidating, but if you keep breathing and just feeling feelings as energies moving through the body, not giving them meaning or being afraid, just allowing. And feelings become a potentially uplifting or enlivening experience. Feeling life fully. And in that process, the breath stays engaged, the chest and belly stay open. And then we soften through the body. Shoulders, arms, the jaw, facial muscles, everything soft. So that there can be these two kind of balancing experiences of the radiant energy, uplifting, and then the softening of the body, settling. And at the center of that, the ongoing experience of the breath. And the breath facilitates this process by opening with the in-breath and releasing with the out-breath. Whenever you notice that the mind has wandered, thoughts have captured your attention, simply return to the breath and the body, sense of openness, to calming. Not trying to achieve anything, make anything happen. Just being with breath and feelings and body. We aren't trying to create any special experience or control the mind or body or feelings. Rather, we bring an attitude of acceptance, interest, allowing, non-resistance. We don't make any experience into a problem. Whatever is happening is just what is happening. We don't fight with that or argue with that or judge that or try to fix that. Simply remember to breathe and allow. All right. Somebody just arrived who didn't want to meditate. There are the people that come just to meditate, and then there are the people who come just for the talk. So, you know, what I was, you know, the guidance that I gave today was kind of motivated by something specific, and I might tell you about that. But just to talk about what I was getting at, and in a way, I can make a connection here with the first three steps of the 12 steps: the powerlessness, the coming to believe in a power greater than ourselves, and then turning it over. So what I'm talking about here is feelings, whatever strong emotions might be arising. And, you know, there's a great tendency to want to control what we feel, you may have noticed. And of course, this is, it's, no wonder I'm not hearing myself. I don't have my earbuds plugged in. There I am. you know, this is part of addiction. Maybe at the heart of addiction is trying to control what we feel. And, you know, obviously, you know, I sort of talk about the same thing all the time, but that's what happens, maybe. So, you know, and this is, of course, a failed strategy. It's what leads to addiction, because over and over you're trying to suppress something or enhance something or create something. And it just is like a temporary band-aid that, you know, eventually comes off, and then you're back where you started, or worse off because of the effects of the drug or the after effects, and the, you know, the energetic impact and the health impact. And so, you know, that's why we're here. You know, that's the primary thing that brought us all here, is that we all had this kind of struggle with something, whether it was drugs, alcohol, foods, sex, you know, gambling, people. But it's very much this same process of trying to control something and make something the way we want it to be. And step one is saying, that's not the way to approach this. Instead, we need to acknowledge, this is what's here right now. You know, this is what's happening. And we see, of course, that we don't like what's happening. I mean, you know, obviously not all the time, but this is for dealing with that problem, right? So, okay. And a natural response is to try to control it, fix it, whatever, suppress it, turn it into something different. But when we realize that that's not a strategy, then, you know, it's kind of like the final desperate measure is like, okay, I'm going to accept it. In a meditative sense, though, that's something that we do in real time as a felt experience. So this is what I was kind of trying to guide you with. I don't know how successfully, but in the meditation that we turn to and give space to and the feelings. And this is, you know, again, where language becomes difficult, because we're describing something that's really not. It doesn't have. It's not an object, actual, you know, in a real sense. But I think of it as energy. So we can see that a feeling is a feeling, and we give it typically we give it a name, and we kind of define it, and we have a story about it, and all of that. And in meditation, we're trying to let go of that process of creating something, making a story out of something, reifying something that isn't a solid object. And so when we turn to just, what does it feel like? How is it showing up in my body and in my mind and heart? Then we take away this naming and judging and just get at something very raw. And this is why I just call it energy, because energy is not good or bad. It's doesn't have meaning. You know, it's just stuff showing up, right? And so when we can get to that, this is what one of the key aspects of mindfulness, just to get to, like, oh, I'm just going to go to that. And of course, that means being fearless, because this is a threat to us. Instinctively, we think it's a threat, but is it? You know, well, and so we have to let go of that fear and just open. And that opening then has this physical component that the breath is involved with, because the breath, when we breathe in, opens the body, right? It opens the chest. If we breathe fully, it opens the belly. It opens the whole torso. And you'll see that when, you know, when we talk about being anxious, what happens physically when we're anxious? The belly tightens, right? And it's not, and in certain emotional states, we'll notice there's a collapsing around the chest, around the heart center. The shoulders will close in, you know, and, you know, a depressed person will typically be kind of hunched over, like, you know, that I really, it's interesting for me in terms of my own history that in sixth grade, I got put into this new school, and something happened to me at that point in my life where my posture started to collapse and I started to slump. And I viewed that, you know, as kids do, like, oh, I'm cool now, kind of, you know, like it was like part of an attitude, right? But we see how we carry our body then has this whole, you know, implication and meaning that then can have this much broader impacts. So learning to open up. So this is the starting point of it, right? Is opening, allowing, letting in. But then there's a secondary part, which is the second half of the breath, which is releasing, right? And so there's opening, giving space to the energy, to the feeling. And then there's softening. Because when we, and this came up because, you know, I'm sorry, but this young professional golfer who I have encountered and befriended, when I met him, I guess last year, I started to teach him about mindfulness. And I hadn't heard from him in a while, but I saw a friend of his yesterday, and she mentioned, she told him she had seen me, and he texted me today and said, he's doing well, but he's still struggling with being nervous on the golf when he's playing in a tournament. And could I give him some guidance, you know? And I know what he wants me to do is to say, like what he's thinking is that the anxiety, the stress is a problem that's got to be solved, right? But that's, of course, the wrong approach. Anytime you hear a professional athlete, a successful professional athlete talk about the nervousness or that stress or anxiety of their performing, what they say is that they use that energy. And that because it's uplifting, right? It's helpful. If you go out and you're bored and, like, you know, sleepy when you go out to play in your, you know, baseball or football or golf, whatever, you know, that's not going to support you. So the energy is helpful. You don't want to try to suppress it, because when you if you try to suppress it, you create tension. And we do the same thing in our meditation, right? Like, I don't want to feel this. I'm going to meditate. I'm going to breathe it away. It's like, no, that's not going to help. You know, I'm going to just focus on my breath. I'm going to shut everything else out. No, it's not going to work. You know, it's the opposite. We open, we allow it. We're fearless. We let it come through. But for an athlete, the thing is that when that energy comes up and you let it in, when you're anxious, that can kind of sweep you away. And part of what happens is the body, the muscles tighten. And so the second half of the process is opening and then softening the muscles. But you're not trying to get rid of the energy, right? And this is the exact same thing we do in our meditation. It's not that we're trying to get rid of this energy. This energy, whatever you're feeling, whether it's pleasant, you know, whether it's anxious, anxiety or sadness or anger, whatever, if you just give it space as energy, and then you soften around it. So giving it space, this is the uplift, right, that I keep doing. Well, this actually helps you to be alert in your meditation, right? Because what's the most common problem in meditation? Falling asleep, one of the most common problems. So if you let in and you, when you sit down, you're like, oh, what am I feeling? Oh, just let me let it come through as energy. Give it, give that, release the energy. Release the dogs of energy, you know, just let them through. But then you soften the body, you know, the shoulders, the jaw. The belly has already sort of theoretically been softened because you've, when you open, all that's softened. But the arms, the hands, you know, everything settles. But there's this nice vibratory energy happening then because you've allowed it in. And now you're sitting in a completely different space. Now you're not in this like, I'm going to meditate and I need to keep those thoughts away and I need to, you know, concentrate and all that I'm trying to do. You're not doing all that. You're creating this openness that allows for whatever is coming through, and that'll keep changing. It's normal. And you're just letting it keep coming through. And each breath, each moment, you're opening and releasing, opening and releasing, opening to the energy, releasing the tension. So, as I say, the step one is the, I'm powerless over this. I'm opening to it. I'm letting it come through. Step two is, I believe that I can hold this. I can contain this energy. This energy will not harm me. It will not, you know, overwhelm me. It's okay. And we could say then that maybe we're trusting in the power of mindfulness, right? We're trusting in the power of the breath, however you want to view it. Just trusting that in my own capacity to hold a feeling. Of course I can hold a feeling, you know. I can hold it off or I can hold it, you know, let it come through, but I can hold it. Either way, it's going to be there. So I said, it's okay. Okay, I trust that. And then the third step, turning it over. I'm venturing into this process. I'm fully stepping into this process. I'm letting it come through. So the second step is the one where we're engaging the fear, right, that I talked about. So the first thing is the opening. And then if there's some fear of it overwhelming me, that's where I'm like, oh, it's okay. I'm okay. I can do this. It's okay. And then the third step is kind of the breathing out. Oh, yeah. Just let this come and let it go. Let it happen. So it's a, you know, I said that I didn't really have like something prepared for today. It's because I think in the recent days, I've been more focused on this kind of process than I have been on any particular sort of Buddhist teaching per se. And so it was kind of only when I started to sit and guide the meditation that I realized, oh, well, this is what I've been processing and working with. Because we can see that this, of course, this applies directly to our meditation and we can apply it very systematically to meditation, but it's also our lives, right? Because these energies, these feelings don't just turn up when you're meditating. You know, in fact, they tend to show up more intensely outside of meditation. So having this as a resource and to see that we can call upon this whole process at any moment, just the key always being to remember to do it, because the energies, the feelings tend to capture us. They tend to capture our mind. They tend to capture our thoughts. They tend to capture our bodies, our moods, and we tend to go into that world of the story and the feeling and the aversion and the wish to control. And so we have to remind ourselves, oh, there's this other way, right? This is the Dharma. This is taking refuge in the Dharma. You know, that, oh, I'm not taking refuge in my story. You know, I'm not taking refuge in self or in emotions or stories. Did I say stories twice? Maybe. I'm taking refuge in the Dharma. And what is the Dharma? Oh, the Dharma is what's really true underneath this. The story is really a surface interpretation of and construction built upon the foundation of just stuff, of just feeling. And so the Dharma always calls us back to something more simple in a way, something more primal, very almost pre-verbal, you know. So in a sense, I think of meditation as reverse evolution. So it would, I guess, be like Devo, devolution, or going back into something more raw and essential in our beingness, our existence as a being, as a living organism. So there are some thoughts to set us off in conversation. Thank you for your attention. I hope that's of some help, and I'd love to hear any reflections, comments, questions. Tanya, hello.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for being here. This was such a great topic. So I actually was able to experience this lesson in a practical way last night in taking my dog to the vet, an emergency vet. And it's just, you know, I was sort of congratulating myself because for much of the experience, I was using this practice. I was being okay with it, being all right with all the feelings surrounding it. For a lot of the 3 hours I was there at the vet clinic, I was meditating with my dog on my lap. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm driving home and I'm patting myself on the back. And then what happened was I started thinking, yeah, but it took 3 different tries to find this vet and the cost. And I just had this, or this is, ties in with the stories. Okay. And I just had this overwhelming urge to share that negative side of it with people because I wanted to get other people to say, oh, that's terrible. And, oh, you poor thing. And
yeah.
So I guess my question for you is, the whole thing was sharing, you know, I don't want to perpetuate my neuroses. So where is the balance there and, you know, sharing what we need to share, but not plugging in so strong to that storyline that it just perpetuates it. Thank you.
I hope your dog is okay. No, those guys are, a big part of our lives. And I don't have an answer to that question because it's just sort of I don't know that it's answerable per se. I mean, I think it's interesting. I really totally get, you know, what you're talking about. I think I get what you're talking about in the sense that internally we can work with this, but there's also just like the social world and our connection with people. And our connection with people is through stories, you know. And so this is one of the tricky things about integrating Dharma into our lives, that, you know, we can't go around being a no self all the time. Like it's not really a way of functioning in the world. So I think that the idea for me is that I participate in the story making world and in the sharing world and even in the drama world, because that's how we interact and connect as human beings. But I try to keep like a corner of my mind knowing that that's what I'm doing. There's nothing wrong with it, but that I don't become completely like absorbed in that and lost in that. And there, of course, there are times when I do, when I'm really frustrated and angry about something or upset about something, or I want to like, you know, show off about something, you know, and it's like, but yeah, I mean, the main thing to me is to just try to remember, like, this is just, you know, a version of reality that I'm presenting as a way of having connection. I mean, you know, a lot of conversation is not about transmitting information. It's just about connecting and, you know, reaching out to other human beings. And so what happens in our lives, we just use that to make stories that we can help us connect with people. And that's, I think it's a really important part of being a human. Otherwise it gets really boring. Unless you're, maybe if you get totally enlightened, then you're just like, but I mean, the Buddha's always telling stories and it's, you know, he's very engaged in reality and in functional reality, you know, talking to kings and, you know, talking to Brahmins and making up similes and things. So, yeah. So, I mean, I wouldn't stress about it, but I think it's good to notice it just like you did, like, oh yeah, here I go. Okay. May I not get completely caught up in this, you know? Thank you though. It's a really great, great topic and kind of question to reflect on. Thanks, Tanya. I see Flippy has his hand up. Hello.
Hey, Kevin. I appreciate the topic, and I have been working with this particular subject for a number of years during the lockdown for basically helping my anxiety or whatever that is that comes up.
Yeah.
And a couple things that I've learned is, and it's right along the lines. I mean, I love how you broke it down into the first three steps, and that was a beautiful process. In the first step, the word admit is in there, and it reminded me of an old sponsor that looked up the word admit in the dictionary, and for him, the definition that he went with was to allow entry.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was kind of fitting with
yep.
what we were talking about. I've learned not to meet the anxiety or the fear with more fear, because it only makes it worse. And that's what we're talking about here is the allowance part and letting it pass through. It's almost like for me, I was talking in a meeting yesterday about the difference between acceptance and allowance. And in a way, acceptance is aligning and agreeing, and allowance is letting it pass through. And for me, it's more of a spiritual principle that seems more aligned with what I'm doing in my life is allowance and curiosity. And then you were saying something about Dharma, what's really true underneath this. And for me, the main thing to realize is that this is impermanent, that this thing passes, and it's good to remind myself when I'm in the middle of that. And the other thing is, now I'm learning, how do I express allowance in these kind of moments of anxiety while I'm, say, at a concert with 50,000 people, or while I'm mobile, or while I'm at work?
Yeah.
And what are the tools I use then? And I've been doing a lot better at it. I've been practicing that, and it's a good reminder to not get caught up in trying to fix it right away or trying to block it out, and focusing more on the allowance part. But at a large concert with a lot of people, it is a lot easier to say, well, I'm just going to go within and close my eyes and put my hand on my heart and block everything out, but you know, I need to remember to let it pass through. So I appreciate the reminders, and I love this topic. It's something I've been working with for a while.
That's great. Thank you. That's a really great share. Appreciate all of that. Thank you. Flo, hi. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Kevin. I had a question. I really liked how you broke it down into the three parts in the practice. And the opening and the allowing, and then the holding and like experiencing of the feeling. But when you're saying turning it over, what I'm hearing, and I just wanted a clarification, are you turning it over by taking refuge? Or, and then what happens if you keep turning it over and the same thing keeps coming up again and again and again?
Yeah.
Do you look into that, or do you just keep turning it over?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say that I have a definitive answer to that, but I can sort of reflect on it. So to me, I'm sort of connecting turning it over to the out-breath, if you will, that which is like, now I'm really softening through the body. And, but the whole process actually is turning it over, right? From the beginning, the allowing and accepting is a turning it over. It's not fighting, because turning it over is kind of the opposite of fighting or trying to control. So right from the beginning, I'm engaged in turning it over in that way. So I'm not thinking of it in terms of language like Dharma so much, although in the background we can see that it is a process of connected to Dharma. But I'm really working on it much more on sort of a visceral level. And then that's how I work with it. And then this morning I'm describing in words how I work with it. What was the other part of what you were saying? Over and over, right? Again, a really good question. And first of all, to me, that's just life in a way, is that, you know, I'm facing the same challenges day after day, moment after moment. I don't become a different person. Nothing gets fixed. Habitual emotional reactions tend to come around repeatedly. There is some hope that repeatedly engaging them in a skillful way will diffuse them to some degree so that they have less power. That's been my experience. But certainly investigation of persistent states is a wise thing to do. And if we want to go back to the steps, we can see that after step 3, the next thing is step 4, which is investigation. and it is trying to uncover. So that certainly has a role in this process. So today I've just been really talking about the kind of felt experience of this, but there is this cognitive level, which is like therapy or writing inventory, or, you know, reflection, you know, talking it out with friends, with sponsors, writing it out. And that's certainly part of it. I think it's important to keep a balance there, because that can turn into somehow I'm going to get control of this by talking about it or writing about it. But that doesn't mean that there isn't a value in sort of understanding some of the, we could call karmic in Buddhist terms, or psychological underpinnings of why this energy keeps showing up. You know, that doesn't, again, like knowing that doesn't solve it, but it's another, it can be brought into the mindfulness practice in the sense of the, particularly in the area where we tend to fall into fear and judgment, particularly judgment, when we're able to say, oh, I understand where this is coming from. This is because of these events in my past, or this tendency that I have. And so I don't have to judge it. It's not my fault. It's not me. It's not I. It's not self. It's just a something that is conditioned into me. And so knowing that can be a way to kind of pull out the judgment part as well as the fear parts. Like, oh, I know this, I'm familiar with this, I don't have to run away from it, it's okay. So yeah, the reflection has a place. It's just to understand what its role is, that its role is not to like solve the problem, that solving it and knowing what, you know, understanding what's behind it isn't going to make it go away. But it helps to in the sort of container of the issue. Okay, thank you. It's similar to rain, probably. Yeah, probably is. Rain is something that I sort of instinctively do, and then there's the thing. I'm gonna hang out. I'm gonna keep talking. I recognize it's almost the end of the hour. I want to just let people know about a coming event at Omega Institute in upstate New York in August with Vimala Sara. And we need people to come because, and if you're the one thing about that weekend is that it will be quite intimate because there aren't going to be a ton of people. You know, if there are 15 people, that will be a good turnout. And there's a lot of time to hang out with the teachers, meal times, and besides in the workshop, the meals and cafe times and stuff. So if you want to hang out with us, come. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. Okay. A couple people, more people have their hands up. Hannah, hello.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
Yes, I, it's interesting how the universe works, that the topic today was feelings. During the meditation and during your talk, what came up for me is something that I have been compassionately investigating lately with myself, is how the mind has developed this way of using the Dharma as a form of aversion towards mm-hmm. my own feelings. Right. And I just find that so interesting how I'm doing something that is considered a gem, right? And the mind comes in and makes it harmful for me.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up in a religious cult, anything that was not about winning people over for Jesus, so if it didn't have anything to do with that, you weren't supposed to share it. I mm-hmm. wasn't supposed to share it. And so I'm discovering how to identify my feelings, few of my feelings and sit with them, and I still have that knee-jerk reaction, even when I'm meeting myself with compassion.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay to feel this. There's a part of me that instinctively goes to, well, someone has it worse. So remember to just be grateful.
Mm.
And I'm glad that I'm aware of it, because that means it's a part of my path and I can probably move towards healing it. But I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts on like how I can balance this, like, compassion without slathering it over with gratitude and then dismissing myself and ultimately gaslighting my own reality.
I love the way you put that all together. I mean, I think it's, you know, just interrupting the story. We just have to catch it. We have to see it. You know it well, which is great. You know, that's the first thing. And then it's having a commitment to interrupt it. And, you know, one way, and this might be sort of, I don't know, more of the same in a way, is sort of a vow that, like, I'm not going to follow this. My new... you know, commandment is do not follow this. And so you use that as a mindfulness spell. So when you start going there, you go, oh, hello, you know, there you are. Thanks, but no thanks. I'm going to breathe instead. And then go to that feeling that came up, that came up with that, that's painful. Because it's, I mean, just like what Flo was talking about, it's like that's deeply connected. Obviously, you explained in brief terms that it's deeply connected to your past, and it's conditioning. You are seeing conditioning. You are seeing the results of karma. So that's not your fault, you know, and it's not you. It's just really amazing. And sometimes it is amazing. Like, sometimes I'm saying to myself, like, I can't believe this is happening again. It's amazing. You know, this crap still comes after me. Wow. You know? And so, yeah, to kind of change that relationship to it, it can be helpful to see the absurdity of it and just as you're pointing to, like, wow, like, here I am trying to be a Dharma practitioner and I'm turning it against myself. Like, that's, and it's a classic thing. I mean, there's a story I've been talking about that I found in the suttas about these monks who killed themselves because they misunderstood one of the teachings the Buddha gave on foulness of the body. He's trying to help them to get over their lust and to not see bodies as sexual things. And instead they're like, oh, well, we might as well just be dead. It's like, wow, that didn't work. You know, that was not, you know, so you're not the first person to, like, take the Dharma, you know, skew it a little bit. It's what we do with our minds, right? We can spoil the finest things, you know. So yeah, I mean, you're on the way. You're figuring it out. Just like, yeah, see if you can interrupt it. Shift the attention, you know, take a breath. Thanks, Hannah. And so to close, Julie, hi.
Hello. Thank you for just an amazing sangha, everybody. The offering, the guided meditation, the shares have just been so amazing. And I'm just so grateful to be here. I think I heard you say something that may just kind of be a no-brainer that I just got reframed in such, like, potentially a life-changing way. I just want to check in. Did you say that letting go is non-resistance?
Probably.
Oh my goodness. Like, really? That's what letting go is? That's what surrender? Of course it is.
Well, it's helpful to think of it that way as instead of like an active thing.
Yes.
Right?
Instead like renunciation or something. Like I keep saying, I suck at the surrender thing, but non-resistance.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. You just framed something for me in a whole new way. It's like, oh, maybe that's more accessible.
Yeah.
Maybe that's more accessible. I just wanted to check that I heard that right.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you, Julie, because that's like, that's one of the things that I really, you know, like, and I talk about this quite a bit in Living Kindness, about how the Buddha uses negative terms, like non-ill will, sometimes rather than be loving. It's like, no, just don't hate. And how that can, as you say, reframe it and make it simpler in a way. Ajahn Pasano does this around letting go as well, or it's something slightly different, like cessation or something. But he says, pay attention to non-arising. And it's like really interesting. Like instead of like trying to find emptiness or something, you know, some like Buddhist, where's the emptiness? It's just like, notice the feeling that like there are things that are arising. And instead, put your attention to the sense of non-arising. It's a little more subtle than non-resistance, but it's the same thing, essentially. It's just like, oh, yeah, don't do anything. That's great. Thanks, Jules. So thank you all for showing up and for, motivating me to teach a little bit here.
Well, for someone that didn't have anything to say, that was one fabulous talk.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve.
Really was really insightful. Thank you. Helped me a lot on some of my own stuff.
Well, a lot of great questions too. Yeah. That really everybody getting into it at a really good level. This Friday will be the Spirit Rock Friday night. Just in case you're looking for me on Friday night, don't go to my Zoom, go to the Spirit Rock Zoom. It's on my website. It's also on the Spirit Rock website. Those who are in the...
also in the chat.
Okay, thank you. And those who are in the Buddhism 12-step class will be meeting this afternoon. And so I'll see some of you then, and otherwise be well. Keep breathing, breathe in, open, breathe out, release. And,
have a beautiful day.
All right, thanks. Vicki, I'm going to send you something. In fact, do you want to hang on for just a minute, Vicki? I just wanted to, and then yep. I won't have to email you.
Right.
Thanks, Monica.
Have a beautiful day, everybody.
Thanks. This isn't any big personal thing. So there was somebody who was emailed me about Al-Anon.